Hello, this is David Brim, and I'm the founder of Orlando Entrepreneurs. We are the hub for Orlando entrepreneurship, and our mission is to connect, cultivate, and celebrate our local entrepreneurs. We bring together our local entrepreneurial ecosystem to help impact our entrepreneurs, their companies, and our local economy. Learn more at OrlandoEntrepreneurs.org. Now over to Josh Wilson to get forward with our show.
Good day, everyone, and welcome to the Orlando Entrepreneur Show. My name is Josh. I'm an entrepreneur, and I travel around Orlando having conversations with entrepreneurs, founders, people who are building companies, and those who invest in the community here. This is a really cool conversation because this is some of my background that made me the entrepreneur that I am today. We're having a conversation with Patrick De La Rosa, who's the CEO and co-founder of a company called Ease Application. Patrick, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are and what are you working on?
Thank you. So excited to be here. Appreciate the opportunity. Ease Applications, who I helped co-found, is a company that you can think of us as Snapchat for hospitals. That's what a lot of folks like to refer to us as. And basically what we are is a software that lets hospitals communicate to patients and families from the moment they come into their care until they leave. And so literally, we've all had somebody in the hospital or in the waiting, in a surgery, and you basically sit in a waiting room terrified. And what we allow you to do is basically receive text, pictures, and videos throughout that entire process. And this way, you're not sitting there in the dark wondering what's going on. And so we've been doing that for about 5 years now. Ease's birthday was March 3rd, 2013.
Happy birthday.
Thank you very much. Yeah, very happy about that day. And we're very excited now. We're expanding. We're in some of the top hospitals. We're in 4 of the top 10 pediatric hospitals in the country and growing fast, which has been very, very exciting. And so I've been helping lead the charge on that.
Wow. So I'm going to ask you tons of questions about the business itself and the model. But let's start with you. Did you always know that you were going to be a technology founder, or kind of what's your background? How did you get started? How did you come up with this idea?
So I never thought, so I'll answer the first part of that. I've never thought I'd be a technology founder. I always knew that I wanted to be a business owner. I've loved it since the day I was little. Actually, my first business was I used to do garage sales, selling my family's old junk.
Yes.
And I bought my first car doing that. And so, there's pictures of me doing a garage sale in front of my parents' house. And I tried to start a business in college. I was at the University of Florida and getting a finance degree, and I was terrible at everything finance related in those classes. And I had to get a tutor. And I was fortunate enough that I met the tutor there that would teach all the athletes. And we hit it off from day one. He was a very funny guy because he would use humor to teach you stuff about finance and math. And I remember talking to him, and I said, there are other people like me that could use your services. And so he looked at me and he said, well, if you get people to show up, I'll teach them. And so I would stand outside of the business school and hand flyers for review sessions for anybody that needed to cram before a test. And make a long story short, we used to get about 200-300 people that would pay $20 a pop to go and listen to him teach them stocks for 3 hours.
Wow.
Yes.
So you're a college student handing out flyers, and you guys are making, and this is a one-time session or a weekend
course?
So
what it started as was there was one in particular very hard finance course, and we would just basically hand out flyers, and he would do kind of a crash course. This is how you're going to pass this test. If you skipped, if you didn't understand it, because the problem was those classes were on TV replay. So I would literally show up. I couldn't ask somebody a question if I was confused, and I would watch a professor on TV in an actual classroom. I couldn't learn that way. It was not interactive enough for me. And so I needed the extra help. And he would tutor, and he would tutor in a way that I could retain it, and it was great. And there were and business students would show up in droves for these sessions. And then it spiraled, and we ended up doing statistics, all the finance courses. I mean, it became a real thing.
So you made some money.
I did, yeah.
Nice. So something that I think is pretty important, and founders, I think a lot of founders have this like special knack for seeing something valuable and then taking that idea, that potential valuable idea or service, and turning it into a business. Mm-hmm. So your partner in crime who was teaching you, or teaching you actually, finance courses, you said this is valuable. Mm-hmm. Other people need this.
Yeah.
Did you did your brain immediately go towards turning this into a business, or what was your, like, what was the thoughts that were going through your head as you were doing this?
Yeah. So it, what I saw was a need. That was the biggest thing is I said, there are other people like me that I guarantee you that are not understanding what's being met. And literally the options were to go to the University of Florida tutoring office. And, you know, you would get a grad student that was, you know, boring and just, it sucked. I mean, there's no other way to say it. And so that was where I started. And then I thought to myself, I bet you we could actually charge for this because private tutors do it. And then he didn't believe me. And it was funny because he was like, maybe 3-4 people show up. And I think our first review session, we had about 50. And I remember he looked terrified because he literally had to go up there. Yeah. And now he was on and it was his show. And I was in the background running. And we used to end up having to rent out the Holiday Inn ballroom because we would have so many people for the review sessions my senior year. So I think I did see it as an opportunity there. Yeah. And my dad wanted me to get a real job. And so this was my perfect way of saying, hey, I made enough money. I don't have to get a real job yet.
Nice. Wow. Okay, cool. So did you graduate with
I graduated a double major in finance business management and needed to figure out what I was going to do with my life. And I got my first job working for a timeshare company in the back office. And it was literally an office space job where all I did were basically TPS reports all day.
Now you're referring to a movie called Office Space. Yep. And they filled out these TPS reports. Yeah,
long, boring reports that they would have to do all day.
Nice.
And that was literally my job. And I would call my wife on my way home and literally say, very dramatically, my life sucks. This is the rest of my life. I'm living in Office Space. And she'd be like, relax, you'll figure something out. And that's when an opportunity came in for me to get out of there and go into real estate. And so I ended up working for a small home builder here in Orlando. They were called Ray Group. And it was great because I got a chance to see the entrepreneurial lifestyle because they were a small family business. And I was hooked from day one.
Nice.
Yeah. So
when I think one of the toughest jobs in the universe is being married to an entrepreneur.
for many reasons.
Yeah. So when you called your wife and you were complaining, my life sucks, this is horrible, I hate TPS reports, I want to break a printer like in the movie.
Yeah.
Great movie, by the way. Everyone needs to see Office Space.
Yes.
What did she say?
You know, my wife has an incredible ability to be calm, and she allowed me to vent. I think it's the Latin in me. I have to get it off my chest. And so, you know, I think her advice was then find another solution. You know, we often say to each other, don't sweat the small stuff. And it was, don't sweat this opportunity. If you don't like it, go find something new. And that's, you know, and luckily she was supportive of all of those. Well, she has been since day one, all of the crazy things I've done to now.
Nice. So, all right. So this is total side conversation, but like, how do you find, as an entrepreneur, what should you look for in a spouse or a partner in terms, like, what should you look for?
I think someone that recognizes, I think if you're an entrepreneur, it just is innate inside of you. You can try and suppress it, you can try and fight it, but it's going to come out eventually. And you need someone that recognizes that and either loves that about you or appreciates it. I was fortunate, my wife's father was an entrepreneur, so she grew up, he owned printing businesses, and so she saw that and grew up in that lifestyle, worked for him, and so I think she just, it was familiar. So I think a patient person too. Definitely.
Awesome. All right, so you got an opportunity to then work for a construction group here, Ray Group. Yep. and you got to see the, and you said you were hooked from day one.
Yeah.
What kind of stuff did you start doing for that company? Coming from timeshare, filling out TPS reports, getting launched into a builder. Like, what were you doing?
So I was put in a sales role. So they wanted me to basically sell, and I was actually horrible at it first, and that's a separate story. But what hooked me up, to answer your question, hooked me at first was the fact that no day was the same. So they had me working on marketing items. They had me working on selling. They had me working on creating brochures. I mean, one of my first projects was I had to make a brochure for their big community. It actually ended up winning a big brochure in the Builder Award, which was a big thing back then for me. But I loved that no day was the same, and I loved that they were nimble. You could think of an idea, make a decision, and then you go do it.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Now, I picked up something. Now, you built a successful company, You guys are 5 years into growing this, and you're in some of the best pediatric hospitals. You guys are really making a difference in terms of supporting the patients who are going through, communicating with their family, and the Snapchat for hospitals.
Yep.
But something I picked up that you said it a few times. So you're successful, and you guys are doing really well, and I'm very happy for this. But I picked up a few things that you said. You were horrible at finance, so you got a tutor, and you passed, and you did well. You were horrible at sales, but eventually you won awards for sales and marketing, right? Like, it sounds like you're pretty self-aware of your strengths and weaknesses. Could you talk to this and other entrepreneurs about being self-aware and the value of knowing your strengths and your weaknesses?
Yes. So what I have been fortunate enough to do is I know what I'm good at, and I know what I'm bad at, and I'm not afraid to admit it. And I think that's served me very well. And as an example, when I was working for that builder, they had me selling in an affordable housing community. That was a very low-income buyer. They didn't have good credit. And so you had to be very patient. You had to really hold their hand and help them navigate the process. And I didn't do well. So it wasn't that I wasn't good at selling. Is I knew quickly I wasn't right for the community that they were trying to have me sell. And fortunately enough, when I was working for them, Baldwin Park came on board. And I'll never forget, because my boss pulled me into the office and he said, listen, we think you'd be really good in Baldwin, but if you're not good, we're going to have to fire you. And I was like,
oh,
okay. And he was real straight up about it, because I just wasn't doing well in that other community. And it was also a predominantly Hispanic buyer, and I speak Spanish, and I would try, but I didn't speak great Spanish. And so there was just a lot of barriers for me to sell. In Baldwin, I ended up selling, I think it was 200 houses.
Wow.
About $38 million worth of real estate. And I flourished because I was in the right place.
Yeah.
And so I think the point of that is, yes, there was the economic boom at the time, the whole real estate market. But I knowing what you're good at and sticking to your sweet spot, kind of like the book Good to Great, it's that. And I've been lucky enough that, well, I've performed my best when I've been lucky enough to be in those situations.
Wow. All right. So for myself and for people in the audience, what's a good way to start identifying your strengths? Like, what's a good way to really discover this is my superpower?
I think if it's fun when you do it, that's actually my opinion. If you can do something for work and it doesn't feel like work, that's what you should do. Because I actually have to do work more than I do anything else in my life, more than I spend time with my kids, my wife, doing any other thing that I want to do, I actually work the most. And so I feel if you enjoy it, then you will actually excel in it. Now, obviously, I wasn't terrible at finances, but I knew it wasn't my strength. It took me more effort to do that, where if you said to me, go make a presentation and try and sell XYZ, it was easier for me. And so what I try to do is become very good at that I knew I excelled in, rather than sort of stumble and try and become good at something that I'm not, which I'm probably never going to be that great at it.
Yeah.
So
the things that you enjoy and that,
yes,
like those are the things that you should start paying attention to, the things that you,
yes,
enjoy, and it doesn't feel like work. You kind of get lost into it. I think there was a book called The Flow,
mm-hmm,
where it talks about like when you start doing that which you are like built to do, and there's a reward, financial reward or some type of reward, you get lost in time.
Yes. One of my questions I ask every person that I interview for a job is, when you're working, what is the task that you do that you feel like you're in the zone?
Ooh.
And to me, that, as like an athlete, like when you just, to your point, just you're doing it and you don't realize, wow, 4 hours just went by. And it's that, whatever that is, that's what you have to pay attention to. And if you can make money at that or create a business around that or be in that field, that's what you should do, in my opinion.
That's very cool. All right, so you're with this group. Built a tremendous amount of homes, sold tons of homes.
Yeah.
Right? $38 million?
Yeah, they became one of the largest Hispanic builders in, I believe, I think either South. I mean, they became big quick, and then it all changed.
Yeah, the market dropped on us, didn't it?
The market dropped. Well, actually, what ended up happening is I sold so many houses that they promoted me, and I became sales manager, and I was very excited, and it was my first leadership role. Now I was over a team of salespeople, and I'll never forget that about 2 or 3 months into that is when the market died. And so now I'm in a leadership position. It's my job to get everybody selling, and
nobody's buying.
And nobody wants to buy anything. And literally from one day to the next, Baldwin just shut. And they had four or five other developments that, you know, just the housing crisis hit. That was pretty scary.
So you called your wife and said what?
You're right. I said, hey, I hope your job is going well. Actually, what ended up happening was things got so bad, unfortunately, that we had layoffs.
Yeah.
Until I ultimately was laid off. And I'll never forget that I was fiscally responsible with the money I had made through that opportunity, but I made some bad real estate investments. I got a little, you know, probably definitely got a little cocky in terms of what I thought I could do. Just like that, your life sort of turns around. You think you're a hotshot real estate guy. No, now you're unemployed, and thank God your wife has a job.
Yeah.
And that was a big transition moment for me. We ended up actually, I had to sell the big, beautiful house. We built a custom house that we loved. It was going to be our dream house forever. We picked out everything. And I had to move in with my parents and literally say, okay, what are we going to do now? What's the next step? And my daughter was a year old, year and a half.
Wow. Yeah. All right, so I hate to like bring up some of these things, but I think that there's so much learning and wisdom that comes from going through a rough time. Do you mind if we chat about it?
No, not at all.
All right, so when the market crashed on me, this real estate market crashed on me, I was working with investors, and overnight I lost everything. Yep. I lost a car, I've lost a house. It's awful. It's awful, right? I've had to move back in with mom and dad, which is humbling, especially when you were on top of your game, opening up real estate offices and people look at, and then moving in with mom and dad. So it was tough. Talk to us about like what you learned through that situation, and like what did it do in your relationship, in your mindset, in your family? Kind of give us some insight, like give us some advice, wisdom.
Well, you know, it was interesting to see how people reacted. I knew I had a lot of friends in real estate at the time. I had been doing it for whatever it was, 7, 8 years. My father has always said the measure of a man is not when things are good, but when they're bad. And that has stuck with me. And so to me, it was, how am I going to react to a bad hand? And, you know, it was interesting because what I actually ended up doing is I threw myself into entrepreneurship. And I sent out hundreds of resumes. And I had actually completed my MBA at Rollins. So I thought, oh, I have a good resume. I sold a bunch of houses. Like, I look good on paper in theory. Nobody responded. And so at the time, I started trying to start a new business, which was there was a company in South Florida that had invented press-on eyeshadow that had real funky designs like zebra patterns and things like that for women. And I saw it, and my uncle and I were talking, and we thought, I wonder if they could do collegiate logos, because it looked like press-on paint. And make a long story short, we went, we met with the company and secured the rights to do Disney characters and NCAA teams. So like, you know, you put UCF on your face or a gator head. We actually ended up making pretty cool things where it was like an axe on your arm for the Florida State tomahawk chop and things like that. And so I threw myself into entrepreneurship because I didn't know what else to do. And so for me, the way that I dealt with my loss of confidence, because it was very scary and also humbling, was I'm going to punch back. And so I did that by trying to start a business and see what would happen. And again, supportive wife that looked at me and said, okay, you want to give it a shot? Let's go.
Wow. She sounds like a beautiful person. she's great. Huh?
Yeah, she is. You're lucky. She really is.
So you mentioned this when you lose your confidence. So I failed a business, a fitness company, and you know, was doing really well. I worked with some good venture capitalists and some really awesome people. And when it fell, I lost a part of like my identity. Like this was like who I became.
Yeah.
And it really shook my confidence. It took me a while to like get back into me feeling like I can do something again. Like, how did you do that? How did you get back in the game?
Well, I will tell you that what's interesting is that press-on face paint business that I started, I put in my savings into that. And so not only did I put me, but I put money and all the blood, sweat, and tears that every entrepreneur does, and that business failed too. And it was, that one was the one that really rattled me. The real estate market died. I sort of blamed it on circumstances outside of that, where when that died, it was terrible. And honestly, it shook me so bad that I went and became a suit. Is the easiest way. I started sending out resumes again, and I was fortunate enough that I got a job with, it was Florida Hospital at the time, now they're Advent Health, but I got a job with Florida Hospital and went the big corporation safe route because, you know, I had a wife, I had a kid, needed to do that. But I will tell you that it took a while. I mean, to the point that I almost didn't do E's because I didn't want to fail again.
Scary,
and that's the scariest
it?
Part, because when you're staring down the barrel of a good idea and you go, you can do this again, you can, you know, you can take a leap of faith, it's very scary because failing is not fun.
Yeah, especially when especially when your savings or your pension or your like retirement, when everything's on that line, you lose it.
100%. 100%. It was yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So as we get older, the risk gets scarier because we understand the cost of things.
Yeah.
Kids need to be fed. Diapers are freaking expensive,
yes.
Right? And when you're staring down the barrel of a good idea, you go, you weigh the cost and the risk a lot heavier. So you came up with this idea for ease. How did you come up with the idea? Yeah, how did you come up with the idea?
So it actually wasn't my idea. So my brother is a pediatric cardiac anesthesiologist.
Oh, wow.
And he works here at Arnold Palmer Hospital. And his partner is also a pediatric cardiac anesthesiologist there. And one day they had a very nervous family that came to the hospital for surgery. And, I mean, these are horribly long surgeries. This is, you know, 2-3-month-old babies. And the mother was terrified, and they decided to take their personal phone. She was so scared, and text her updates throughout the surgery. So instead of sitting in a waiting room for the 8 hours, not knowing what's going on, they sent her a picture of her baby with a little mask on her face as she was falling asleep and said, she's doing okay. She's safely off to sleep.
Oh, my gosh.
Then 30 minutes later, they sent her a picture and said, we started the surgery. 30 minutes later, they sent another update. And they did that the entire 8 hours. Make a long story short, what ended up happening is about 2 weeks later, that mom came back and actually kept all the pictures and scrapbooked it and gave it to them as a gift to say, thank you. You have no idea what this did for me and my family during that surgery, just to feel like I was connected to my little baby in the OR. And literally, they were so overcome by what an impact it had, they started doing it on more and more families. And they did it on 50 families and did a research study around it to kind of see. They wanted to put data behind the idea. It wasn't just, you know, let me send these updates. And the results were off the charts positive. Every single family not only wanted updates, but they wanted to see the beating heart. They wanted to see pictures of their child or their loved one in the OR. And I'll never forget, we went out for a drink, and they were telling me all about it. And it was one of those things, they're like, we think this could be cool, but we don't know what to do. And I mean, the light bulb just went off. And I said, this could be an absolute idea and a business and an app if we can make it HIPAA compliant, secure, and do something with it. And that's literally when Ease sort of was born.
Wow. Holy moly. So, ladies and gentlemen listening into this, let me chat with you for a minute. Imagine, I don't know if any of you guys have been in this, guys and gals have been in this situation before, but imagine sitting in a waiting room, and in the next room, your child is getting surgery on, and you're sitting there just waiting, biting your nails, praying to God that everything goes okay, and you just want to know information. Just tell me what's going on, right? So put yourself in that situation, and the 50 other families that went through the initial beta of this, put yourself in there like, your child is in the hands of a doctor, and you're sitting there waiting to get information. Any information, just give me information. And that's kind of what was presented to you over some drinks of like, this is the data and this is what happened. You said that this is important and needed. This is a business.
Well, and what was interesting is they actually showed me what they sent too. They actually showed me a video of a little baby's heart beating in the chest. And they said, this is what we're sending. And I'll never forget, I looked at them, I said, you people are crazy. I said, and I'm squeamish. I don't like being in a hospital. I don't like blood, none of it. And which is funny, I would work in healthcare. And I see this, and they telling me, no, Patrick, you don't understand. Think about it in the context. This is their daughter. They knew that she was going for surgery. And what that is a video of, isn't just her heart. It's her heart beating after it's been fixed. And when you stop and you think about it in that context, it's the most beautiful thing you've ever seen. That thing that you were so scared of, now you have a video that goes, hey, it's been fixed. That was transformative. And that was the moment where we said, this needs to be available for everybody. It needs to be, in my opinion, the standard of care because it has such a positive impact on the experience.
Wow. So you had a few drinks with these guys, or ate food.
Yeah.
And then... You called your wife after, and what did you
call her? Right. Well, actually, what ended up happening, it was interesting because I'll never forget, again, it to me, when you have a supportive network around you, I actually, so my brother offered, you know, was like, you want to be a part of this? Because I was sort of helping them, is actually how I looked at it. I was like, you know, I said, you guys can make this into something, and then my brother wanted me to be a part of it, and I was actually, my immediate reaction was to put my hand up and say no. For two reasons. One, I was very nervous to go into business with family. I'm very close to my brother and you know, one of my best friends, and I didn't, that made me very nervous because business and money changes everything. Mm-hmm. And then the second side of it was, to be candid, I doubted myself. I was like, can I do this? This is it again. I've already tried. And I'll never forget, my wife was like, you have to do this. She's like, you're going to be miserable being sued. You have to try. And I'll never forget, there was a Rollins College Shark Tank, the venture pitch competition. Yeah. It was a real turning point for us. And she looked at me and said, you guys got to enter in this. And I was like, I don't want to enter this. I'm tired. I don't want to fill out the stupid, you know, paperwork. I don't want to do a Shark Tank. I don't care. We're not going to win. I started thinking of every excuse. And then she was like, you have to do it. You're going to win. And I was like, all right, fine, I'll do it. And so I filled out the application, and we ended up winning, and we won $25,000. And it was at that moment that I was like, okay, we have to do this. And that was really it was a turning point because it forced me to focus what was an idea into a business. Mm-hmm. And conceptualize from a, hey, this is a cool thing that we did in the ORs and we updated 50 families, to how do we make this something that's real. And that's when we brought in our other partner, Dr. William DeCampley. He's the cardiac surgeon over at Arnold Palmer Hospital. So the guy that actually does the surgeries with them is now a part of EASE. And that's when the four of us, you know, together really made it into what it was.
So you won a pitch competition, got some money. Like, this thing is becoming real. How'd you quit your job? How'd you cut the suit?
Yeah. So it took me a while to cut the suit, actually. What really ended up happening is I would work on this on nights and weekends, and I had no life for a while. And all of us helped nights and weekends, just trying to make it into something. And they were able to do a pilot study at Arnold Palmer Hospital where they did it with enough patients that we proved it worked. And then I'm fortunate enough that my partners have great backgrounds and a lot of connections. The cardiac industry is very small. It's very big, but very small. Everybody knows each other. And so one of my partners, Dr. Monroe, was able to approach Nationwide Children's and get it in there. And we got into a few others. And so we got into enough places that I said, okay, this can, you know, be something. And I still remember sitting with my wife and saying, okay, well, I have enough revenue that I can quit and it'll last 8 months. And after month eight, if things don't change, then I got to go be a suit again. And she said, well, then make the jump. And we made it past the 8 months.
Wow, man, this is cool. I'm just thinking of like how, and this might be the weirdest question you ever asked. What would have been different if maybe your wife didn't encourage you, or maybe you weren't married or something like that? Like, if she wasn't in the picture, how could this have been different?
I don't think I would have done it. I think I probably would have been, because the other part of it was, most doctors can be a little bit challenging to deal with, and so I was also nervous about the doctors. And so, you know, between her counsel and the advice of others, that I was like, I have to do this. And I'll tell you, I don't think if she would have given me that nudge, especially to do that Shark Tank, because that's what forced me to focus and really make it into a business. Yeah, I'd probably still be a suit. I'm probably still miserable.
Wow. And with maybe a little bit more grays on the top, right?
Less. Less grays, more hair, but I'd be miserable.
Yeah, sure. So you guys made the jump.
Yeah.
You decided to do this. You saw the impact that it was having. So you guys were collecting data, mm-hmm. right? So when you go talk with a hospital and they go, listen, why do we need Snapchat for hospital? Like, how does this benefit us? You're sitting across from an executive director or a president of a hospital or a division, yeah. And they go, Patrick, why should we even do this? Why, how does this benefit us? We see that it benefits them, but how does it benefit the hospital?
Yeah. Well, I think what where we have been very fortunate is by having my three partners be three doctors that know healthcare, and I worked in healthcare, but I know business and sales. It was a perfect marriage because we spoke the language. We weren't four developers that got a cool idea and built an app. We were three clinical experts and a hospital executive that got together and made a company. And so that created other disadvantages, but when it came to speaking the language of hospitals, we understood. And we understood it was all about ROI, what is this going to do for my market share? What is this going to do for our patient satisfaction scores? The, sort of the hot buttons that we knew Ease hit. And so I think that has been actually very helpful for us. And, you know, it's interesting. We check our egos at the door when it comes to Ease. When there's ever anything clinical that needs to be made, any clinical decisions, I always defer to them. And when there's a business decision that needs to be made, we make it collectively, but, you know, they defer to me. And I think that's helped us tremendously when it came to how to deal with hospitals, how to pitch, and so on.
Wow. So what is the business model of Ease? And what is, yeah, what's the business model? How do you guys make money?
So we committed early on that we would never charge families for this. So it is 100% free for the patients and the families to download. And then our customer, so to speak, is the hospital, and they pay an annual subscription.
Okay. So the hospital sponsors their patients to be able to use this.
Right.
So they pay,
they offer it as a service.
Okay. They offer this as a service for their patients to go through. What kind of, do you have a success story or something so we can paint a picture? You guys started in neonatal and doing things with babies in the cardiac division. Mm-hmm. Like, what other success stories have you guys seen come up from the last 5 years of doing Ease?
Probably the one that I'm most excited about was when we landed Lehigh Valley Medical Center. Lehigh Valley Medical Center is a 8-campus hospital system in Philadelphia. And I'll never forget that I got a phone call to our line, and it was the director of IT. And she said that a senior executive had experienced Ease at another hospital, and she wanted more information. Make a long story short, we went and were offered the opportunity to pitch against a competitor at their facility. And I'll never forget walking into a room of 50 people, and my competitor sitting in the front. And he offered a product that I don't think is competition. It was very different than ours. It sends generic messages, and it just wasn't what we do, which is an actual picture of grandpa, as opposed to a message that says, they're in surgery. But nonetheless, I had to pitch in front of these 50 people, get them to convince Tobias, and they did, which was the first piece of the story that was a success. But what was great is they ended up taking it system-wide into all of their campuses, and now they've become one of our partners, and we use them as a living laboratory to test out new products. They're huge advocates, and they've just been great to work with. And so to land a hospital of that level, where we didn't have a connection, where we were up against somebody else, and we had to convince a room of 50 nurses and doctors that we were the right choice, was a really defining, cool moment. It was, we say it internally, we crossed the chasm that day.
Nice, nice. So how many patients a year or a month use this application to communicate and to check in on their family who's in the next room or their loved ones? Like, how many people are using this?
So right now we are in 51 hospitals, and you know I think the last stat that I saw was we had 22,000 people that used it in the last 2 months, I believe it was.
Wow.
But that was the patients. That was not even all the people that they invited. So on average, what we're seeing is anywhere between 4 to 7 people is what you would invite. So think about it. If you were having surgery tomorrow, you'd invite your wife, your parents, her parents, your brother and sister, maybe your best friend. And so that's sort of that network that gets created. And then all of those people get the updates on what's happening in your, you know, throughout your surgery. Or, you know, if you have a baby in the NICU or and so on.
Yeah, the grandmothers, if something ever, God forbid, had happened to my kid, my mom would be, you know, my mom and my mother-in-law would be the ones that would, like, download the app, and they would want to use this because they want, that's their babies, their grandbabies,
well,
right?
One of the coolest stories of Ease is we had a soldier deployed in overseas, and his wife was pregnant, had the baby, and the baby had to have emergency surgery, and he couldn't be here. and he got eased in, I think it was Afghanistan, and literally was able to see his son's surgery play by play every 30 minutes, an update while he was overseas. And it's those moments when you realize how many people can't be in the waiting room and what that did for him. Here's a guy serving his country, and yet his son is having open heart surgery. That was when I knew that EASE was something special that I'm lucky to be a part of.
Wow, I didn't even think of it in that regard. So guy or gal or family member overseas, serving our country, now got to be a part of his son's miraculous recovery.
Yeah. Well, and to your point that you made earlier, you just want information. And that's the thing that surprised me the most with EASE. Is I figure people wouldn't want to see these pictures and these images, and you wouldn't want to know. And it's actually the complete opposite, because, you know, your imagination is worse. It's what you see on TV, people running around screaming. And surgery is actually very linear. And you know, they tell you, we're going to make an incision, then we're going to fix this, then we're going to close the incision, and then you're going to go to this room. And all we do is tell you what's happening as it's happening with EASE. But it's amazing how it literally puts air back in the room. And makes families feel connected.
Hmm. So you guys are a 5-year-old company.
Mm-hmm.
What were some of the challenges in dealing with, you know, hospitals and large, you know, large groups? Like, what are some of the challenges that a technology group selling into hospitals mm-hmm. faces?
So the first and foremost challenge is culture. Hospitals, you know, if you think of the law of diffusion of innovation curve, laggards, if there's like a section past laggards, that's hospitals.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it was very challenging where, well, we don't update from the OR. That's just how we do it. And you'd have to look at them and be like, well, you know, that needs to change. The technology's here. So culturally, finding the institutions that were the right place for this, that sort of, I would just say they get it. They see EASE and they go, oh, I get this. I would want this if my loved one was having surgery. That's been a challenge, and luckily it's better. I mean, I still remember being in rooms 5 years ago where we would tell people, and surgeons would laugh at us and say, we are never doing this. As a matter of fact, one of our hospitals, there were 3 surgeons that literally refused to do EASE. They said, we will never do this in our ORs. And 3 months later, they apologized, and now they do it on all their cases because they saw the data, their minds changed, they saw the feedback from families. So culturally, finding that was one. And then two, unfortunately, hospitals are incredibly bureaucratic. So just the red tape alone, as an entrepreneur, what I thought was going to be an easy sale, which is, hey, there's an app, lets you communicate to your families, you know, yay or nay, is, well, we have this committee and this committee and this committee and this person and this other person, all that have to consensusly decide that they want to do something. That's been challenging.
Wow. So this is in the world of B2B sales, business to business sales. This is what is called a complex sale.
100%.
Right. So your sales team, talk to us about like maybe high level overview of what your sales process looks like. Mm-hmm. So we can encourage other people who are in complex sales and B2B stuff. We could give them maybe one piece of a golden nugget or something.
So I think the biggest thing that we have realized is for our sale that there are pillars that have to be in place for a sale to happen. And so, you know, you need... Do you need a clinical champion? Do you need an executive champion? I remember an investor asked me one time, who's the guy that signs the check for your product? And I said, well, and I gave whatever answer I gave. He said, no, who's the person that signs your check? And once I realized that, I was missing that in the beginning. So to me, knowing who is your actual buyer is so important, because I remember I would get excited that I was talking to a nurse at a prestigious hospital, but the nurse isn't the one that signs the check. It's the COO or it's whoever that is. And so, I that was a big learning lesson for us, is very quickly establishing who signs the check. And then after that is really figuring out your value proposition. For us was really understanding there's a heart component to EASE, meaning it's just the right thing to do. And while that's wonderful, a CFO doesn't really care about that. So, okay, then what's the ROI? And being able to articulate for EASE, what is that? So we change patient satisfaction scores. We increase the willingness to recommend. We change, whatever metrics that we establish, and you can show that, then you're speaking their language. And so identifying that early is very important.
So maybe the golden nugget wrapped up into a little bow is is know who the buyer is, who you're speaking to, and speak the language that they're speaking.
100%.
Right? So if you're speaking to the clinicians, the clinical people, you're speaking the clinical side of things. If you're speaking to the CFO, you're speaking the ROI, the data, the numbers, the what this will do to make his job better or her job better.
Because in that room is 10 people. Each one of them has a different hot button. And so arming my sales team with what does a surgeon care about? Because he doesn't care as much about patient satisfaction because he doesn't. It's just what he cares about his reputation, or he cares that his patients have a good experience. Okay, what does the CNO care about? She cares that it's easy for her nurses to do this. And so understanding how you explain the workflow. So really understanding your audience and being able to drive a point home to each of them that is relevant is to me the most important part. Hmm.
What does the future look like for Ease? What do you see?
I'm excited because I see the market changing. Again, as I mentioned earlier, 5 years ago we were laughed out of a room because we told them we're going to send pictures of beating heart on your patients to your families or your nurses will. Where now people are seeking us, or the fact that you can say, yeah, I'm in 4 of the top 10 pediatric hospitals. Your peers are doing this. Join the train. You're late to the party. Let's go.
Yep.
And seeing them react like that has been exciting. So I think for us, the future is, you know, to me, this should be the standard of care at every hospital. There is no reason, in the same way that, you know, if you're at home, it's 100 degrees out in Florida, you have AC. Why? Do you need it? Can you live without it? Yes. Does it make our lives a lot easier and a lot better? Absolutely. The same thing with what Ease does. Can I sit in a waiting room terrified for 4 hours? Yes, I can. That's what people have been doing for years. Or I can get this and have a completely different experience and not be tethered. I can go walk outside and get a cup of coffee. I can go somewhere and pray. I can do whatever I want that makes me feel better during a very hard time. I see that becoming the standard, and I see Ease continuing to be the thought leader in that space. Because 5 years worth of data and thousands of procedures that we've done, we've learned a lot. I mean, I know the top 10 messages you should send on a family. I know the top 10 you shouldn't send on to a family.
Yeah. What message should you not send to a family member?
anything that requires or that could elicit a question. So, you know, if you think about it, if I tell you on a heart surgery, we're going to put your loved one on bypass, and then we're going to take him off bypass. Sending an update that says, we just went on bypass, he's stable. That's an update that you can understand and you can sort of digest. If you send something complex with complex medical jargon that you look at and you go, I don't know what that means, I'm now scared and confused, that's you should never send that. Mm. And so, you know, that's a good example of just it. And by the way, it sounds like common sense, but it's true. Or anything degrading, you know, obviously, and things like that.
Yeah. So I was a paramedic and I worked in emergency rooms, and the way that we spoke to other medics, nurses, doctors is not the way we communicate to their family members, right? Okay. So we would go in a room and it'd be a cold blue, a stat, a this or that, you know. But when we step out of the room, we had to speak patient. We had to speak family.
100%. Yeah.
So in your education and training and your platform, you're teaching to cross that chasm of communication between doctors, nurses, to family members, right?
Well, that is a huge differentiator for us, is the fact that I don't just hand you this software and say, here you go, you're on your own. Anybody can make an app that communicates. For us, we have an entire training program, and we actually, when we onboard, we use real nurses to teach their nurses how to do Ease. So we take nurses from our other hospitals that already do it and have them train so that they're being trained by a colleague. Because there's a big difference between me as a suit teaching you how to communicate than there is that somebody that lives your life in the OR every day. And so that's also been something that our clients have loved, is we give them guide sheets. We teach them, this is how you communicate during an orthopedic surgery. This is how you communicate during a neurosurgery. And that is really part of what makes Ease so much more than Snapchat for hospitals. It's actually an entire communication program for the hospital.
This is really cool. What questions should I have asked you that I completely missed the mark and haven't asked you?
What can you do as a listener to change this? Because here's, whether you're an entrepreneur or not, I will tell you this. We have all had somebody in the waiting room, and we have all been a family member there. And I would tell you that I think we should all demand this of our surgeons. And I think everyone should let anybody know that they know this is available, because one day you'll be sitting in a waiting room again. And if they don't have ease, you're going to think of it. And if they do, you're going to be very happy that you had it, because it does change. And so I would tell you that the question to ask is, what can I do to help? Because if you don't want to sit in a waiting room terrified, you need to ask your doctor for it now.
So, ladies and gentlemen, listening into this conversation with Patrick and myself, this is something that you could do to help us, right? So, if you are in a situation where maybe you have some influence in a medical facility or a hospital, or you know a doctor, you should say, "Hey, maybe you should look at ease." So then, with that, Patrick, how could people learn more about ease and connect with you guys?
Thank you. Yeah, so our website is easeapplications.com. You can follow us on Twitter, on Facebook, and also reach out. I mean, we are very proud of what we do here, and so if there's any questions that you have on what ease does or how you can, we've had families. I'll never forget this. We had a family that found out about us on the internet and started crowdfunding to bring this to Arkansas Children's, and they actually raised $9,000 on their own. Gave it to the foundation, and that helped bring ease to Arkansas Children's. Again, ease is, and I don't mean this to be arrogant in any way, ease is something special because of what it does for those poor families. And so seeing that, that's how people have gotten involved. They've literally crowdfunded to bring us there.
Wow, that is so cool. Well, Patrick, thank you so much for this conversation. This is really special, really, really powerful what you're doing. We appreciate you coming on the show, sharing your story.
Thank you. I enjoyed
Did I miss anything?
it. No, I think that's it. Hopefully you enjoyed it too.
Awesome. Ladies and gentlemen listening into the show, hope you enjoyed this conversation. I encourage you to go to easeapplication.com. Is it ease application?
Applications plural. Easeapplications.com.
Applications. And I'll include those links in the show notes so you guys could go and click directly that to connect with them and follow them on the social media and to get your medical community to get into this, because this is something that should be a standard of care from what I'm hearing. So guys, thank you for listening into this episode. Reach out to our guests and let them know that you appreciate them, that you've learned something, and that they've inspired you. So thanks for listening in to this episode. Hope you guys have a lovely day, and we will talk with you all on the next episode. Goodbye, everyone.
Thank you for listening in on today's episode. If you would like to be a guest on the show or start a conversation with me, Josh, your host, send me an email to josh@orlandoentrepreneurs.org. You can also find out more information on Orlando's entrepreneurial ecosystem, discover resources to help you start and grow your business, and subscribe to future shows by visiting www.orlandoentrepreneurs.org.